Welcome to Legacy Fundraising Chat, where we talk about everything legacy related to help you as a fundraiser generate more interest amongst your supporters in legacy giving. I'm your host, Sunita Gudu, founder of Persuasion and legacy marketer, providing consultancy, training, coaching and interim legacy support to small to medium-sized charities. I'm delighted that the National Free Wills Network is sponsoring my podcast. They allow you to offer your supporters a free solicitor written will anywhere in the UK, and the charity receives full measurable results. With 15 years of experience and over 500 million raised in future income for charities, the network can help charities of all shapes and sizes launch and maximise their legacy programmes. To find out more, visit nationalfreewills.net. Welcome, listener, to episode 53. So today I have an international guest from Melbourne, Australia. So why am I interviewing June Stewart on the show? Well, I was first introduced to June through my headphones as she appeared on a guest on another podcast, and I really liked her straightforward approach to copywriting, and that's something I want to bring to you today. This, I believe, is a specialism that can be underrated, but very important to get right. I'm sure you'll agree. Here's my interview with June. Welcome, June, to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sunita. It's lovely to be here.
Great. June, for the purposes of our listener, I'm sure they'd love to know how you got started your career in copywriting.
Oh, how did I get started in copywriting? That's actually very interesting. My background is actually in journalism. So I studied journalism at university. I've worked in journalism for a bit, and then I got a little bit disillusioned with the whole media thing. And I got basically moved on into PR and IT and marketing. And then I got a job at a charity working in media and comms. And then I moved across into fundraising, where I then was responsible for managing acquisition and bequests and legacies, among other things. And then, yeah, basically I was managing other people who were writing. And I thought, you know what, with my background, having a background in writing, I thought, I reckon I can do better than this. When I went on maternity leave, I just thought, look, I'll just give it a go. And I did some studying in direct marketing, particularly direct response writing. And then I just started working for different charities. And then it just grew from there. And I discovered that I really loved copywriting for charities and getting the results. And I'd much rather write for great causes than, I don't know, to sell cereal or whatever. Not that there's anything wrong with selling cereal. But yeah, it was just so much more. You feel really like your work is meaningful and that you're making a difference.
I mean, there's so much there I want to ask you about, but I think first of all, my listener is actually going to love you for being a fellow fundraiser, because I think there's often this thing when working with suppliers and that are slightly removed from the organization is that, do they absolutely get it? Do they know what it's actually like for me to raise money? And how challenging that can be, especially in some organizations where targets can be quite high. And there is a lot of reliance sometimes on legacy income because it can be, as we know, particularly high. So I think that's really good to know that about you as well, that I suppose when you're writing copy, you've got that in mind as well, having that experience. And it just shows that you've got this whole raft of experience that you're bringing into your copywriting. And I guess I'd like to talk to you about why legacy copywriting.
I think there's something actually quite special about legacy and about helping people to really make a difference. Like, people donate to charity during their lifetimes to make a difference and they feel good about that. But often a lot of donors can't actually afford to give really big gifts during their lifetime. It's only really, for some of them anyway, it's only really after they pass on that they're actually able to make a contribution from their estate or even give all of their estate to a charity or to a good cause. That's something that's actually special to be part of because it's really helping them to live on after they've actually passed on. And, you know, immortality, right? We don't have the elixir of life or whatever, but your impact actually can live on when you make a gift in will, when you leave a legacy to a charity. That's what I really love about legacy copywriting, is to actually encourage people to think beyond themselves and to think beyond their lives and to actually have a role in helping people, not necessarily to live forever, but for their passion and what they care about to continue on after they pass on.
I think what we're absolutely doing in the sector is helping people to make informed decisions, aren't we? And you're presenting that information. And you make a really good point that many people cannot give significant gifts in their lifetime, but they can in death. And I guess that's where legacies can play a major role in someone's life. And you've touched on the types of things that people might leave legacies for. What types of projects do you work on in terms of legacy copywriting?
We write all types of legacy-related copy, whether that's bequest booklets or lead generation surveys to identify people who may be interested in leaving a gift in will or a legacy, that kind of thing. In terms of the types of causes we work for, there are hospitals, there's international development, there is like your usual social justice type of organisations, there are conservation organisations. Look, there's a bit of a range, and the motivations for leaving a legacy often, like the donor's passion is often very different. That's what makes it so interesting. It's just understanding what people actually really care about. Like there are so many different ways that you can have an impact in the world. I really like the types of projects where you're really doing work that's going to impact a community for decades or generations to come, really. Like you're really looking, if you build a new hospital wing or something like that, that's really going to have an impact for at least the next two or three generations. I don't have a particular cause that I really am passionate about working with as such, because I think one of the things that I really love about working as a consultant is that I get to actually work with so many different great causes. There are so many things that I'm interested in. My role in it is just a very small role. Like all those legacy managers and people out there meeting with donors and stuff like that are the ones really doing the hard work. But if we can write something that helps them as they're meeting donors or putting together the bequest or the legacy proposition that inspires them to actually give, then it's a privilege to actually be involved in that.
You say a small role, June, but actually a fundamental role. And I wanted to ask you actually, in terms of what kind of mistakes have you seen charities make in this space? And it's fine to give some really bad examples. I imagine you've come across all types of different copy and you've thought, oh, we really shouldn't say that in legacies. So I think if you've got anything like that for my listener, they'd absolutely love it. It would definitely help them.
I don't have those kinds of bloopers, but the big mistake I think that charities often make with legacies is just that they haven't refined their proposition enough. So they talk a lot about having an impact in the future, but they don't define what that impact actually is and make it specific to their organisation. For example, one of my bugbears, and it's not just in legacies, but in other types of fundraising as well, is people who, I guess, charities that talk about bringing hope to families in the future. Hope is a very nebulous, I think, it's how are you bringing them hope? Are you bringing them hope because there is currently no cure for what they're suffering? Or are you bringing them hope because they get a shot at finishing school and earning a living, which they didn't get before? I think as well, the other mistake that charities make when talking to donors about legacies is telling donors what the charity wants donors to know instead of what donors actually want to know. You're telling donors about all your amazing programs and stuff like that, whereas what donors actually really want to know is How is leaving a bequest actually going to make my dollar go further with you than with another organisation? How long will my legacy actually last for compared to just like leaving it in the bank or giving it to my relatives or my children? Charities need to cast vision, I think, for donors of what the world can be like. They actually have to marry their own vision. Instead of telling donors what their vision is, they need to marry their own vision to what the donor's personal vision of what they want to achieve. Charities are also often too corporate in the way they deal with donors. They are trying to sell donors a message instead of selling donors the passion and the excitement and the joy of making a difference. That sounds a little bit airy-fairy, but honestly, it's, you
I
know.
Actually agree with you, June. It's some of the things that I see a lot in my work, and I just say to clients, just use simple language as if you were talking to a friend. And this whole thing of unlocking potential, it's quite meaningless,
yes,
really, isn't it? When you think about it.
Yeah. Oh, and
without suffering,
you know, where
suffering doesn't take place.
Is a limit, yeah, is eliminated, whether it's eradicating leprosy forever or ensuring that no child has to go hungry. Like I said, it can sound a bit nebulous, but sometimes I think we lose the passion and the excitement and the joy of giving by drowning donors in our best practice and our evidence-based programs.
And interestingly, the thing that you were saying, of course, the best way to find out what donors actually want is to ask them, isn't it?
One of the things that I do when we're working on a legacy project is, it's like, can I actually talk to some donors? It's, I know about your programs and what you want to ask for, and I know quite a lot about your organization, but when it comes to legacies, I really want to talk to some people who are already leaving a legacy and ask them why they're doing it. If they've already got staff who know the answer to it, that's fine. But there's nothing like still interviewing somebody who's going to leave a legacy and ask them why they're doing it and having them tell you about the love of their life that has died from a particular disease, but they received amazing care at a particular hospital, or speaking to somebody who was really touched by sponsoring a child. And when you actually talk to these donors and you hear why they're giving, you can then begin to translate that into an encouragement to other people to give as well, or these other legacy givers already do. A lot of them will actually say as well, look, the family's taken care of. They will get some of my money, but they're not getting all of it. They understand what I'm doing. I've spoken to so many legacy donors who've said, look, and I'm also giving some to you guys, and then I'm also giving some to these guys. And often the legacy is split at least two or three ways. Oh, I spoke to this lovely man a few months ago. At the end of our interview with him, he got up and pulled out a list and he ran his finger down the list. And then he said, oh, you guys are getting these particular shares. And I didn't see all the names on the list, but I swear there must have been at least, there was a list of like about 20 charities there, all with shares allocated to them. A lot of these donors aren't just generous to one organisation. They love giving. That's what I call actually the true donor. It's like you've got a lot of people who'll give you like a one-off gift here or there, but they never really give to you again. And then you get some donors who are transactional. They'll give to you because they, every time you ask. But then you've got people who just really love giving and they plan their giving. And those are the really amazing people who give really transformational gifts. And then they're thinking, and they do think about legacy. I do believe that practically every charity has some of these people in their donor base. They just have to get out there and find them as well. And then we can start doing interesting things with copywriting and donor psychology and stuff like that to actually try and get them to self-identify them.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose it becomes the snowball effect. And everything that you said is very typical in the UK as well. It's very unusual to have a donor that gives 100% of their estate. And typically, if they are hugely emotional about particular causes, it's likely to be between 2 and 5. But the 22 charities, I still see that in wills, unfortunately. But I do think there's a conversation that probably needs to be had with these donors around actually how much impact can they make, because a lot of this money in a state can get eaten up in solicitor fees, etc. And when you talk about residuary, how much is actually going to be left if you're splitting between 22 charities?
Yes.
That's definitely an episode for another time for sure. But it's good to know that you also have that challenge over there as well, June, to be honest. It's not
just
the UK. Just turning attention to how can charities make the most of working with someone like you that's highly experienced, and what types of questions should charities be asking if they were to brief you in to do a piece of, for example, a legacy DM?
The types of things I look out for is if they're asking questions about the actual legacy journey itself, and I guess like about our experience in terms of working with different types of donors and understanding their motivations. One of the key things for me is really how well the charity actually understands their donors and their audience. Sometimes I think that the reasons why people may actually leave a legacy are not quite the same as why they might just give a $50 gift, for example. If the charity wants to get the most out of working with us, they need to actually understand that legacies are a long-term thing, and they need to be looking not even just 2 or 3 years, but really 5 to 10 at the bare minimum. I don't know whether you're having this in the UK, but in Australia there has been an upsurge in people who are taking advantage of online will platforms.
So, it's very big now in the UK,
We believe that is actually driving the average age of confirming a gift in will lower. So when you actually consider that, you then have to actually realise that instead of it taking 10, 15 years to realise a bequest, or even like 7 to 10 years, I think it used to be, it might actually take you 15 to 20, possibly even 30 years or even longer to realise a bequest.
It's that long-term investment, isn't it, within the organisation?
Yes.
And just to add, the online wills is that definitely for me working with clients is that we are a lot more strategic around actually looking at donor age when we're talking about marketing legacies. And yes, I am seeing a lot of charities who are putting out their free wills offer into the ether and getting all sorts of results back, and people as young as in their 30s and 40s leaving a legacy. But is it really a legacy? Because what is their estate actually going to be worth? So it almost becomes a bit meaningless. But thankfully, we still have the in-person solicitor approach organizations and schemes in place. That's the general preference for an older audience. Do you have that as well?
Yeah, I believe so. The thing is, the charities that are doing it well do have a bit of a mix. So they will be doing in-person solicitations, definitely. But a lot of charities are also experimenting with the online will space as well. And I don't necessarily think that's bad, as long as you just understand that your stewardship costs over that time are going to be higher. Look, if they're already existing donors, that's okay, because you're going to steward them anyway. And the fact that you've gotten them to commit to a gift in will is great.
We're just coming to the end now, unfortunately. Is there anything else you want to share with my listener that you think would really help them in terms of legacy copywriting or helping them to find the right copywriter for them?
What you definitely don't want, I think, from a legacy copywriter is somebody who's just going to copy and paste what they've written for 5 other different charities into a template for you. What you really want is a copywriter who's going to actually really get to know, or who already does know, your donors really well, who's willing to actually do some of the hard work in interviewing some of your legacy donors to understand what their motivations are, especially if you don't actually know them yourself, because some organizations do know them very well, in which case that's not as necessary. But you want somebody who's going to actually take the time to understand those donors themselves. Anybody can take what you say about your donors and stick something into ChatGPT and churn out something. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. But that's not what we do. We take a much more bespoke approach. Mm-hmm. Legacies are personal. And I think that you need personal, authentic writing to actually connect with your potential legacy donors that are going to actually be giving to you in future. I get so many people saying to me, oh, there's a bot going to take over your job. And it's, I'm not too worried at the moment.
No.
Yeah, look, I understand that if you're a really tiny charity and you can't afford a copywriter, then yeah, by all means, I'm not going to criticize you for doing that. We all have to do what we have to do. But the thing is that I do think that once you get to a certain size and once you have a certain number of donors, if you want to have authentic relationships with your donors, you can't do that with AI. You have to do that with somebody who either speaks to them face-to-face or who speaks to them through compelling, personal, authentic copywriting.
Sure, definitely.
Yeah.
Very wise final words there, June. Thank you so much. And I will be popping in the show notes a bio. I'm sure my listener will be really interested to read more about you and a link to your services. And of course, you have a newsletter as well, don't you, that people can subscribe to.
Yeah, that's right.
That's great. Thank you so much
that's great.
For coming on the show.
Thanks so much for that, Sunita, and thanks for having me. I hope that was useful to your listeners, and I really hope that people can connect with donors that are passionate about giving and are passionate about their cause. I think it's just such a wonderful privilege to work in fundraising and to work with these amazing people, both fundraisers and donors, because I think they have a special place in the world.
Thank you so much, June.
Listener, I hope my chat with June gave you some ideas on how to approach your own legacy copy. Here's some takeaways if you need them. Number one, get your legacy proposition clear. Tell the donor what they want to know, not what you want to tell them. Number two, do the donor research. Why would anybody want to, or why have they left you a legacy? You absolutely need to know this. Number three, paint the vision of what the donor's actions will create. And avoid these nebulous words such as hope and joy without backing it up with the why. So listener, I'm super grateful that you are listening to the podcast. If you could either rate or share my podcast with someone in your professional network, I'd absolutely love it if we could actually help more legacy fundraisers get the support and guidance and maybe even the confidence that they might need. Until next time.
Thank you so much for listening to Legacy Fundraising Chat, brought to you by Persuasion, a consultancy training and coaching organisation helping fundraisers just like you. Thank you also for everything that you do for your cause and the charity sector, making it an inspiring place to work. I'm your host, Sunita Gudu, championing your legacy fundraising efforts.